Time to talk gardening. Hi, I'm Larry Mealer. My guest today, Barb Larson, Kenosha County Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have Barb back and great to have you listening in on this edition of Garden Talk. And we can talk about a lot of things here today. We can talk about seeds. We can talk about perennials. We can talk about vegetables, maybe the lawn, maybe shrubs. Barb shaking her head, yes.
Everything we can talk about. It's wonderful. I drove up here into Madison, and all the trees are in bloom. Of course, the dandelions are in bloom, too.
Yes.
But, you know.
But how are things in Kenosha County?
They are great, just beautiful. And as I said, the trees are in bloom. A lot of the shrubs are in bloom. We have wonderful daffodils out all over the place. So it's definitely spring. It's just gorgeous this year.
What kinds of questions are you getting this time of the year from your Kenosha area?
Lawn care questions.
Lawn care.
Yeah, because a lot of people are wondering whether or not it's time to put their crabgrass pre-emergent on. And It certainly is in the southern part of the state, because one of the things we look for are the forsythian bloom. And yes, they are in full bloom
right now.
So now is the time to put your crabgrass preventer on, if that's what you like to use. Or if for people who want an alternative, where they want to use more of an organic type of lawn care crabgrass pre-emergent, they can use corn gluten, which also has nitrogen in it. So it's a fertilizer. Mm-hmm. Or what I prefer to do is just keep my lawn nice and thick, and I never mow any shorter than about 3 inches, and it usually will shade out most of the crabgrass. So I usually don't even put pre-emergent on my lawn because of that.
Me too. I'm a big one for keeping the grass up at 3 inches. I still have problems, but we have a shady lawn, so it's... It's, you know, when you get too much shade in your lawn, it's
hard. Well, I have problems, too, because I have dogs. So.
Well, that's a whole different
story. Yes, it is.
Kettle of fish. Well, let's go to Matilda and Baldwin to start the show here. Matilda, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
And you want to know my question?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I have an old daffodil bed, and the plants come up, but they're not blooming. Maybe I get one or two a year, but I just wonder if I can revive that.
Oh, how old is old?
Well, we started planting it 25 years ago.
Yeah, you know, daffodils will last a long, long time, but it could be that they're kind of getting to the end of their lifespan. The only other thing I can ask is, are they still in full sun? Or are they in shade now?
No, they're in full sun part of the time.
Okay, yeah.
Most, you know, it's longer now when we don't have leaves on the trees. And
right, because that's the other thing is those bulbs really need to have as much light as possible. You can have them in part shade, and they will usually rebuild. And then the last thing I should ask you is you make sure you leave the foliage up until it completely yellows out on its own. Because
yeah, I usually try to do that.
Okay, that's good. Well, I'd say then if they're getting enough sunlight and you're leaving the foliage up until they yellow back or die back on their own, it could be that it's just time to think about some new bulbs for that spot.
Yep.
Oh, and that sounds like a lot of work. I was hoping there was something I could just put on it to make them start growing.
Yeah, probably not. And you got to think about it. If you got 20 or 25 years out of them for one digging, you know,
yeah,
it's probably
that's pretty
time
good.
Again, you know.
Good luck. Thanks, Matilda. Appreciate your call. Carrie and Delafield, let's turn to you now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I am wondering, I had a lovely Korean spice bush in my flower garden in front of my house, and with all the snow cover this year, when the snow all melted, it had been chewed. There's like one stalk that's alive, and so I think it's basically, I'm going to replace it. And I'm just wanting to know what time of year one should get something like that and put it in the ground.
Anytime you would like. A lot of those are grown in containers or in pots, and so you can basically transplant those anytime. And I think you're absolutely right. If you've only got one stalk or one stem left and the rest have all been chewed by probably voles, It's not going to come back. The Korean spice viburnums are one that you can't cut way back or and get it to re-sprout very well. So, you know, if you love that, I'd say stick with it. I have one right out my back door because I love the fragrance of them. And there's no reason that you can't replant in exactly the same spot. Just make sure you dig out the old one really well.
Okay, and then when is the time to plant butterfly bush?
Again, whenever they start showing up in the garden centers, you can plant them in spring or early summer because, again, those are, again, usually container-grown plants.
Yep. Okay, great.
So,
thank you.
Yep.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I see I don't know what it was, rabbits probably, maybe squirrels that took our three service berry plants. And
oh, no. Oh.
That's an expensive little proposition there that replacing those. I don't know what I'm going to, I don't think I'm going to put the service berries back in.
Well, you know, when they get really hungry, they'll pretty much chew on most anything.
Yeah.
I have some stuff that get rabbit pruned every year, but it, thank goodness it's high enough that it doesn't really disturb them. So,
yeah. Dave in Elm Grove, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
What can I do for you?
I had a question for Barb about vegetable garden tilling. We don't have a large garden. It's about 12 by 14 feet. And we generally plant the same plants in the same area. I'm wondering two things, really. Is it a good idea to till the soil? And we have some thistles that have invaded, and I wonder if tilling is going to, you know, chop them up and plant more seeds. And then number two, should we rotate the vegetables around, the tomatoes and the peppers and whatnot?
Okay, let's start with the last question first, because that's the quick answer. And yes, you should move them around. It's always important that you rotate your vegetables, even if in a fairly small garden. And you want to move them so that the families, so tomatoes and peppers are all in the same family. So don't plant tomatoes and then peppers in the same spot. You want to move something that's in a different family. So if you had a tomato there one year, then you would move your broccoli into there the next year. And then the following year might be peas or beans or something like that. So you move them all around in different spots. Tilling is, and I'm guessing that this is in the ground garden, right? It's not a raised bed?
No, it's not a raised
okay.
bed.
You know, if your soil is really good condition, you may not have to till. And I actually am one person who prefers to fall till rather than spring till. Because then in the fall, I can incorporate that compost or composted manure, the organic matter into it. It tends to be drier in the fall, and then it kind of works and helps break down. And then in the spring, I'm all ready to go. So often if you till in the spring, it can be a little bit wet, and you can actually destroy the soil. It can cause hardening or clumping of the soil a little bit more. So unless you really need to till it, I don't think you need to till your garden every single year. Just work it up a little bit with a shovel and take care of it that way. The other thing is if you have getting some thistle in, yes, you will want to control that. And I would be concerned about, depending on the type of thistle, that if it's one with an extensive root system like Canada thistle, you will spread it all over your garden because you'll chop up those roots. So you may want to selectively control or dig out or however you're going to try to control those thistle before you do anything else this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, thank you for calling. And, yeah, they can be nasty, especially Canada thistle. And
yes, and it's considered a noxious weed in a lot of states because it is such a problem to control.
Mary and Brown Deer, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Thank you. Good morning. Good
morning.
I'm looking for advice about, I have a large pot. It sits next to the house. It's a southern exposure, and it's close to the driveway. So it's a hot place, lots of reflected light. And I've had a small evergreen in there, which has outgrown its place.
Mm-hmm.
It actually lasted quite a few years. And I wondered if you had a recommendation for an evergreen that wouldn't grow too fast and tolerate the heat there.
And I want you all to know I did not pay this lady to call because I'm a big conifer lover.
Oh, that's good. This was some kind of a that they used to sell as little Christmas trees for gifts, and that's how we got it. And it did, it hung in there a long, long time, but it's, it needs changing now.
Well, you know, the thing is that there are a plethora of wonderful, what are called garden conifers that you could plant in that, that pot. And so anything from something that would be, you know, more Christmas tree shaped like you had, or to something that would be a small weeping one or a globe shaped or contorted or whatever.
I need a little height. It would look better in the spot.
Okay.
Little height like 6 feet or?
Well, not necessarily, no, but more a vertical rather than weeping or round.
Okay. All right. What I suggest you do is there are a lot of really good conifer, specialty conifer nurseries in Wisconsin. And what you want to look for is conifers now are rated by the American Conifer Society based on their growth rate. And so the miniatures will grow less than an inch a year. Those are usually used in like railroad gardens and rock gardens. So that's probably a little too slow growth rate for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But you may want to look at the next size up, which is called a dwarf. And those will grow some less than about 3 inches a year in all directions. So it would continue to stay in that pot for quite a long period of time. Then for everybody, the next one is an intermediate growth rate, which goes from 6 to 12 inches. And then the large, which is like a typical, what we'd see with a white pine and something like that, will grow over a foot a year.
Sure.
So I would look for something in that dwarf category. And if you're in a pot, you're going to need something that has good hardiness. So you want something that is hardy to zone 4, because the root systems are not as hardy as the tops are. So look around, see what you like. If you have the internet, go on Google American Conifer Society. You can find all sorts of things there, too.
All right.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. If you have a question for Barb Larson, Kenosha County Extension Horticulture Educator, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We have open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast. Or email at talk@WPR.org. And speaking of emails, we have one here from Judith in Milwaukee. Has a big perennial garden. Everything seems to have survived the winter and is growing up nicely, but the soil is, all capital letters, alarmingly dry. Been waiting for good soaking rain, but I'm wondering, should I be setting up sprinklers and trying to compensate for the lack of rain here in the Milwaukee area?
Yes. That was a quick answer. Yeah, if... I mean, we're used to fairly wet springs, and you're right. I was thinking that this morning, that although I've had a little bit of rain at my house, not much. So I was thinking I'm going to have to start watering my perennials if we don't get much. Too bad we didn't get any last night, because we could have used a little bit.
Yeah. And then Cliff, a Brownsville listener, says, for the listener who called about her daffodils, he was noting that daffodil bulbs should be dug and divided every few years, removing and replanting the smaller bulbs in another spot so they continue to grow and mature. We dig and divide every 5 years, and we have beautiful daffodils every
year. Okay. Well, certainly try that. It's worth it. I think it depends a lot on your soil and some of those kinds of things in the varieties, but it's certainly worth a try.
Jean in Manitowoc. On to you. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. Thank you for your garden shows, Larry.
Sure.
I have two quick questions. I have a beautiful Annabelle hydrangea in its third season. I didn't cut it back in the fall. I like the dried flower heads. And it's leafing out now all up to the tops of the woody stems. Should I be pruning that?
Not after it started to leaf out. I really prefer, it's fine to spring prune them. In fact, I will quite often spring prune them because I'm like you. I love those flower heads in the wintertime.
Right.
But and Annabelle's are one that you can give a haircut back to about 4 to 6 inches tall. But don't do it after they start to leaf out. I think you're better off waiting another year and either doing it in this fall or waiting until next March or so.
So just cut off the flower heads.
Yep, trim off the flower heads. Clean it up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for calling. Pete in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the woman's name.
Barb Larson.
Oh, okay. thank you. I've heard in the past that it's not a good idea to water plants with water that's come off of a water softener. And I think that's because most people use sodium chloride in their water softener. But we use potassium chloride, so I'm looking for some advice as far as if it's okay to use that kind of soft water on plants or if hard water direct from the well is still a better choice.
I know when we're doing things like salts on, sidewalks and that kind of thing, those are usually that are less harmful for plants and soil. It tends to be potassium chloride solutions. I still would be just a little cautious about how you're using it and how much you're using it. So, my suggestion, because that's what I like to use, is rain barrels. Mm-hmm. And that way you get Mother Nature's water. So I don't know if that's something you can set up and do or how much you've got, but you might want to think about that too, so that you're using fresh water and you don't have to worry about it getting too hard either.
Well, we have a little more watering than we can accommodate
okay.
with a normal size rain barrel. So perhaps then you're thinking that the water from the well might be more appropriate then?
Yeah, I think you can probably use a little bit of both. I wouldn't use exclusively your softened water. A lot of people
don't have their They don't have the softeners set up for cold water.
Or for outside water. Mine isn't either.
Right. Yeah, this is a new faucet I'm going to install inside of a lean-to greenhouse, so it's just a matter of which line that I tap into, and unfortunately the soft water line is much closer to the greenhouse than going back closer to the well.
Yeah, especially if you're talking about greenhouse now, too, I think I'd stick with the hard water.
You would. Okay.
Just to be safe.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling, Pete. Angie in West Allis, we'll get to you in just a minute. But just to remind you, Barb Larson is our guest, Kenosha County Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some more calls and on to Angie in West Allis next. Angie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about two nine-bark trees that I have in the yard. They're the Diablo kind.
Yes, uh-huh.
We get a really bad powder mildew on them every year, and I do buy the spray to try and control it. It doesn't seem to work too well. We've had them about 3 years, and again, this spring, a lot of it seems dead. I'm getting some blooming from some of the branches coming off of the branches that look dead. The bark on there is just kind of peeling off. It's not looking real good. I'm wondering, can I trim it back, or how do I make it kind of get vibrant?
Okay. First of all, I should tell you that peeling bark is normal on nine barks. That's the what happens. That's the normal bark characteristic on them. But the way you would prune nine barks is, because it's a multi-stem suckering type of shrub, you every year can cut out about a third of the biggest, heaviest stems all the way back at the ground line. So that will also decrease the size quite often, and it will open it up so you get better air movement through there and hopefully reduce your powdery mildew problem. Although Diablos are very prone to powdery mildew. But that's how I'd recommend that you take care of it. And that will also encourage regrowth from the root system and from the crown so that you have nice, vigorous, healthy growth. And every year or two, cut out those biggest, heaviest stems all the way back at the ground line.
Okay, so then does the nine bark grow from old wood, or does it sprout new wood every year to grow off?
It will sprout new. Now, it's where you're getting that new and old has to do with usually what it blooms on, and nine bark will bloom on older wood because it's a spring blooming one. I just prefer to prune all of my shrubs in March or early April, just because I can see what I'm doing and I don't have to fight through the leaves. But if you want to maintain the maximum amount of flowers for these spring-blooming shrubs, you prune them within a couple of weeks after they bloom. Either way. But if you cut out a third of the stems, you're still going to have flowers. You're not trimming it off. You're not hedging it off.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Iris in Harvard, Illinois, up next. Hi, Iris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having this show.
Sure.
I have a very beautiful, very old lilac bush.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering what's the appropriate time to prune it, and what do I prune off of it?
Okay, and it's lots of stems coming up, or it suckers a lot. It's an old-fashioned common type lilac.
It's got a big like trunk on it, and at some point in its life, it was knocked over, so it's a very horizontal, eccentric shape. And
okay, are you getting any sprouts coming up from the root system?
No.
Okay. The reason I ask is most lilacs are, the common lilacs are the old-fashioned lilacs are suckering. So they're pruned exactly like we just talked about with the nine bark, where you cut out the biggest, heaviest stems every year and it causes resprouting. It's possible you may have one of the ones that was called more like a Persian lilac, and sometimes those don't force out a lot of sucker growth. So if that's the case, first of all, I would keep an eye out and maybe even wait a year and make sure that if you're getting new sprouts up in from the soil around the base of the plant, you don't cut those off. Hopefully at the point that you'll get to cut that big old stem off of it.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're probably set for just trimming back and shaping kind of thing. And most lilacs are done shortly after they bloom so that you can have maximum bloom on them.
Okay, great. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that there's deadwood, or what looks like deadwood in there, which was the branches that bloomed last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of those are entirely not even putting off leaves.
Right. You always take the dead stuff out and go all the way back down to either the base of the plant or where you have live wood.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And Ann in Baraboo, we turn to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thanks for your expertise this morning.
Thank you.
The only year I've ever had a really nice lawn is when I paid a commercial landscaper to come out and treat it like five times over the summer. What can I do to create this really nice lawn, and do I need several treatments all summer long of something?
No.
Yeah.
What the key is basically proper culture. So mowing so that you keep it high enough so that it's never shorter than about 2.5 or 3 inches tall. Mowing so you never cut off more than about a third of the grass blade at a time. Watering correctly if it needs it, which means deeply and less frequently. So once or twice a week if we don't get adequate rainfall, and lawns usually need about 1 inch of water a week during the growing season. Fertilizing correctly, and that means fertilizing usually around Memorial Day. And then if you're returning your clippings to the lawn, if you're using a mulching mower, then the next time you'd fertilize would be Labor Day, or you can even skip the Labor Day and go with Halloween. So that kind of thing. And then for weed control, spot treat for weed control. And we have a really nice lawn care calendar that you can download from wihort.wisc.edu. Sorry.
Do that once more.
wihort.wisc.edu. Mm-hmm. And that's our urban horticulture website. And then there's fact sheets, and right there is the lawn care calendar. Or you can also go to the learning store if you want something, you know, more detailed. And there are several great publications there on lawn care.
You know, that last mowing, I've seen some research, or we're talking about some research, that's they're now saying that maybe earlier than Halloween.
Right.
On that last fertilizing, maybe even the end of September.
Right, they are. And that's why I'm always kind of hesitant on that. But that's Dr. Doug Soldat and Dr. John Steyer, who are our turf specialists and our soil specialists. and they've been doing a lot of research on that and when it is. So we may actually see those standards changed fairly soon when that research is kind of finished up. And yeah, you're right. We may go to where it could be that Labor Day is the key time to fertilize versus Halloween, which is what we've said for years.
Yep.
And for the spot weeding, do you recommend, right now I'm spotted with dandelions, just digging them all up, or is there a treatment that's safe? Last year I tried spraying them with something, but then I got these brown, you know, grass brown spots.
Well, I mean, some of this, I always love that safe question because that's always a personal decision on what you think is safe. Yes, you can hand, you know, pull them out or dig them out. But you have to continue to do that because it's going to take a while before you get the root system dead. Or you can spot treat. If you're spot treating, use something that only kills the dandelions and doesn't kill your lawn. So don't use something like glyphosate, which will also kill the lawn. But there's any number of products that will, if you just spot spray the dandelions, will kill dandelions. The other thing is, yes, you can do it this time of year, but the real key time to try to treat most weeds or to kill most weeds is in fall, so September, because you get a better kill in the fall.
Excellent. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks
Brian,
for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, and if you don't kill them, they'll often winter, weaken them enough so they winter kill.
Right, yeah.
Why that fall is so good. Dan in Poinette. Oops, we just lost Dan in Poinette. Let's go to Tracy in Cumberland. Hi, Tracy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a question about growing asparagus. We have really heavy clay ground in our area, and what I'm wondering what the best solution is to growing asparagus in that area.
Just like any other, when you're getting ready to prepare to start a garden, especially if you've got a compacted or a more clay soil, I would want to work a lot of organic matter into it. So you can use compost, you can use composted manure, any good quality type of organic matter, and you want to work it down for asparagus. Oh, probably, I would say a good 8 to 12 inches,
yeah.
Because this is a long time it's going to be there. So you really want to, now's the key time to prepare the soil. You also want to control any weeds that might be there, especially long-term weeds like quackgrass, and get rid of them, because otherwise you're not going to get rid of them after you get the asparagus growing in there.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. Mark in Decorah, Iowa. On to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I have actually two questions, and the first one is on composting green manure, with as far as the ryegrass, tilling it under in the spring.
Yep.
And I wondered, what is the advantage of that as to not doing anything other than just taking compost from your garden?
It's just another way of adding organic matter to the soil, and certainly depending on the type of green manure, and or also sometimes called cover crops, and so you could use rye. Some people use clovers, which has the advantage of fixing nitrogen, so adding a little bit more of that to the soil. So it's just a matter of then tilling that in. Now, when you're tilling it in, you also know, though, that it's going to take a while for the bacteria and the fungi in the soil to help break that fresh organic matter down. So usually we recommend giving it a little bit of chance to break down instead of planting directly into it. The other thing is, I've seen people use something like that and then leave part of it as pathways to mow that they can walk on in their garden, and then just till up strips or sections in between, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my second question was, I have about an acre ground I would like to get growing into switchgrass for pheasant habitat and deer habitat. Any advice as to how to get that to germinate? I sampled a piece last spring, and out of about 50-foot by 50-foot area, I didn't have one plant germinate.
And I will have to confess, that's one of those things that I would have to research and look it up try to find out whether there's any you know, kind of specifics with switchgrass? I know a lot of people are starting to grow that. It's possibly being looked at as a possible biodiesel kind of thing or biofuel. So I'm sorry I can't answer you right now, but I would suggest you either contact, you're in Iowa, there's still extension in Iowa, or I'm sure they would answer you across the river in Wisconsin, too. So mm-hmm. give your county office or the closest county office a call, and they can look that up for you, too.
All right.
Or you can email me, and I'll look it up, too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
all
thanks.
Right, thanks a lot for calling. And what's your email?
Barbara.Larson@ces.uwex.edu.
Barbara.
A long one.
Yeah.
You know, if you just go, if you Google Kenosha UW Extension, that'll get our homepage, and then you can go find me from there. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
Andrew in La Crosse emailed us and says, my wife and I are going to try our hand at a vegetable garden this year. We just built some raised beds, filled them with black garden soil. We're excited. We don't know which vegetables are best for beginning gardeners. What would be your top five vegetables to plant, and when should they be planted? Now, this is for the La Crosse area.
I was going to say, and where was it? La Crosse? Okay.
But he's got some good black dirt there from the
All
sound
right.
of it.
Yep. Well, my first answer is, what do you like to eat?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the most important thing. And so most people like to grow tomatoes, and especially if you purchase tomatoes from transplants, those are relatively easy to grow. Beans are very easy to grow. Let's see, what
onions.
Else would I like to do? Onions are easy to grow. Garlic's easy to grow. You know, I think most vegetables that the vast majority of us like to eat are not difficult to grow. Carrots, radishes, Swiss chard, spinach. I mean, they're all pretty easy to grow. Now, when do you plant them? A lot of that's based on whether it's what's called a cool season crop or a warm season crop. So the cool season are things like lettuces, the Swiss chard, the spinach, peas are all cool season. And even La Crosse, you could probably get those in the ground right now. Then things like peppers, tomatoes, beans are all warm season, and they really don't like it. They want to wait until the soil is nice and warm.
Peppers
so
too.
Peppers too. Things like cucumbers, zucchini, all of those like warm temperatures. So especially up towards La Crosse, I'm thinking you're thinking closer to Memorial Day for those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially peppers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you get a little cold snap on peppers, on your pepper plants.
They're not happy.
They're not happy at all.
No. And they really like that warm soil, and that's what you're really waiting for. Now, you can always cover them with like a floating row cover if it gets cool, but for a starter, I just wait for those warm season until Memorial Day.
And doesn't UW Extension have a bulletin or something online about starting a garden?
We do. There are a number of different publications, both individual publications on some of the different types of crops or groups of crops. And then there are another couple of great books that are kind of beginning gardener kinds of things that are all available, too. So.
All right, let's turn to Philip in Madison next. Hi, Philip.
Hi. I have a flip side of the dandelion question. Is there any real detriment to having an entire lawn of dandelions? and if not, how do I get there?
Only if your neighbors hate you. Otherwise, you know, it's a personal decision, just like anything else. I mean, they're not a native plant. They're introduced. They're native to Europe. I know some people like to have some dandelions because they love that, you know, it's early dandelion greens in their salad, too. And as long as you're not putting an herbicide on your lawn or any other kind of chemical product, you can eat them.
Okay. Yeah. And then wine, too.
Yeah, you can make, wine, that was so. My next point. Yep. You can make dandelion wine.
I knew you were going to jump in with that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And I kind of like dandelion wine, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Alan Kakana, it's your turn. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry and Barb. I have a question. On our side yard of our house, we've been trying to start flower beds, and my neighbor has a has a big black walnut tree that kind of hangs over the side yard there. And anything we plant, the closer it gets to that tree, it either dies or you can see the progression. You know, one year we planted calla lilies and you know, one grew about 6 inches tall, and then the further away they got from this tree, the taller they got. But
right.
What's in a black walnut, or what? First of all, there's got to be some type of poison in a black walnut that is not good for other plants because they don't grow very well there. And
Chuglawn.
Or lawn. And even on the backside of our house, we have some plants. I don't even know what they are. They're some type of bushes that the birds really like. They have these little pickers on them. They're kind of a purple bush. They grow. They start out in the spring green, and then as the summer goes on, they turn kind of purple. But even those, I mean, the closer they are to that black walnut tree, the progression of them, they just grow.
Right. Black walnuts produce a substance called juglon, and it is a substance that prevents a lot of other plants from growing nearby. And what you're describing is just classic black walnut or juglon toxicity. So the closer it is to the tree, the more it stunts or kills the plants. Some plants are highly sensitive. Tomatoes are a great example of one that's very highly sensitive to it. But there are plants that will grow in and around black walnut trees. And the other thing that, and it's not just the root system, the stems have it, the leaves have it, the nuts have it. So it can be a real issue for anybody that's trying to grow anything near a black walnut tree. There are, however, some helps for you. We have a publication, again, one of our garden fact sheets. So, you know, if you go Wisconsin UW Extension fact sheets or garden facts, it should come up. And it will talk about, it's written by Dr. Laura Joel, about plants you can grow in and near black walnuts. So you can look at that. You can also, the Morton Arboretum has a nice fact sheet on it, too. So what I would do is try some of those different plants. I would always start with smaller, younger, less expensive ones and see what grows best, and never use those for mulch. No, don't mulch those leaves or try to keep those around at all.
Yeah, this tree, too, it has like these, I don't know, they're kind of a curve-shaped stick that comes off of this tree, and, you know, they blow all over the yard, and I try to...
That's actually, they have what's called a compound leaf, so that's what's called the rachis. It's the stem for all the little leaflets, and, yeah, they can be kind of messy along with the walnuts, the black walnuts themselves.
Yeah, because it's right next to my garage, and it just fills eave trough up, so I got a big pile of this stuff, you know, to get rid of. Kind of annoying, but...
One other thing you can do is you could do a raised bed if you...
I was going to ask you that. You know, if I did, what my wife wants me to do is put a fence up there and then, you know, start a flower bed there, kind of, you know, on our side the fence. But I was kind of afraid to do that because anything we've planted in the past has just died. You know?
Well, you'd need something on the bottom of the raised bed, wouldn't you, Bart, to keep the roots from coming up.
Yes, you would. You'd have to put in either landscape fabric or plastic. And that may help because otherwise the roots will come up through it. The other thing you have to do is make sure that you don't have leaves and nuts that end up getting planted in there. I got a great call from a guy said that he had trouble. He had raised beds and vegetable gardens, and he turns out that the squirrels were planting nuts in there, black walnuts in there, and he couldn't figure out why the stuff wasn't growing. So,
sure. Absolutely. Okay.
So, yeah, you can do it that way, but it is a little tricky. I mean, the other option is to go to containers and grow things that you want to grow, like the calla lilies or the cannas in pots, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Another thought. Thanks, Al.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
And we'll take some more calls, but just to let you know, Barb Larson is our guest today. Barbara is Kenosha County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls, and let's turn next to Marty in Dubuque, Iowa. Marty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Creeping Charlie, which is a common question, I know. But it doesn't seem like there are very many answers to how to deal with it in a large yard because we have a dog, and I'm just not willing to use any kind of chemicals on the lawn.
Go ahead.
So I'm not sure if it's just a constant manual operation and that's all you can do, or if there might be a particular kind of grass we could use that might be stronger in
yard. If you choose not to use chemicals for Creeping Charlie, you need to learn to like Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
It's a ground cover.
Okay.
Because it is, you're right, it's very difficult to control, and it's, if you you can hand pull, but if you leave any little bit of stem or root, it's going to come back. So there really aren't a lot of good ways to control it that would be non-chemical kind of things.
The folks in Iowa, I think it was University of Iowa, did the research on borax.
But we're not recommending that anymore because
it kills it.
Well, but the problem is that, and the reason boron, we don't recommend is it adds boron to the soil.
Yeah.
And if you get too much at all, you can't grow any plants.
Yeah.
In
there.
Uh-huh.
So to think that, you know, which for a while that was heavily touted as that was the, you know, quote, safe way to do it. And no, because you don't want to not be able to grow anything back there at all. So,
Are there any chemical treatments that you can use that are safe for pets?
Well, you know, it's like all of these are tested, so it's, you need to do your research and read the labels really carefully. The product that seems to work the best is one called Triclopyr, and it's Triclopyr, and that's a generic name, so you need to read the labels, and it would need to be labeled for use on lawns. But I don't have the label in front of me, so you need to be very careful, just like anything else, anything you use. You have to be careful in whatever you're using.
You'd have to keep the dogs off of it, at least until it dries.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes there's no easy answer.
What about a type of grass that might be a little bit stronger for a dog yard? Is there a, like a thicker...
Well,
depends on how much shade you have, and
do you have shade, or is it
it's very sunny and the top of the yard is very dry and the bottom is above a spring, so it's very wet.
Yeah, my Creeping Charlie's in full shade or full sun too. So, you know, our recommendation for lawns in full sun is Kentucky bluegrass, and using a new variety of Kentucky bluegrass and trying to keep it growing actively. But quite often, you know, I've seen Creeping Charlie will outcompete the grass. So,
yeah.
10 years ago, about 10 years ago now, I got so mad I killed my entire lawn, started all over again, and guess what? I have just as much Creeping Charlie.
I was going to say, well, that's the other alternative. And they say, you know, if you're over 50% weed, that's what you're supposed to do, is start all over again. But you're right, if you don't get it.
It just keeps, you know, the neighbors still had it. And, you know.
Yep.
I'm going to learn from Larry's mistake and not kill my whole yard.
Just think of it as you have European pasture style lawn instead.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Dolores in Kenosha, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. I love the last call. A lot of times it's a frame of mind. If it's green and it looks good, it lives. And I want to thank Barb, since I'm from Kenosha, I enjoy your columns in the local newspaper. My question is about, I have a garden box, 4x8, and we've had it for... Well, we've had this one for about 10 years. I originally had one with railroad timbers that broke down. So we've been doing this for maybe 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that we moved them to different places in the yard. I've decided we're going to do greens and root vegetables in here. And the soil settles. You got to, you know, put more stuff in. And I'm thinking of give a plug to Father Dom's.
Right.
Ducks do compost, and just some good soil. Anything that really the root crops need, greens are not
no.
a big problem. But
no, and root crops aren't either. They're easy to grow too. So Like we talked about earlier, grow what you like to grow and make sure, the only thing I would say is make mm-hmm. sure your boxes are deep enough for your root crops. So,
well, they're 12 inches.
Okay,
and
that's what I was going to suggest.
With carrots. So.
Okay, good. Then you're all set. Choose a nice compost and, you know, add it in and mix it up a little bit and plant your root crops and your greens.
Oh, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. All right, Jove, your turn. Hi, in Door County.
I just wanted to mention that while you're wiping out dandelions, they're one of the important first foods for honeybees. And also, the ramifications of using chemicals on honeybee food
right.
is another problem.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yep, you're right.
So I just wanted to remind you of that.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, and if you do, there's one other way of getting rid of dandelions that we talked, we didn't mention. I mentioned it in the past on the show, but there is a little implement dandelion mm-hmm. remover thing that you prong down next to the dandelion. It does a fairly good job of getting the whole root out.
Right, right. And I'm one that goes around with my, you know, sharp trowel and implement, and I pop them all up all the time and in order to get rid of them. So, you know, we all have to make our personal decisions on those things.
And for Creeping Charlie, I have my daughter, my six-year-old, and I have spent many fun hours out on the lawn actually picking. I know it doesn't do any good at all, but it's fun to be out there with her.
Yeah.
And actually, it does do some good. Those areas where we pick it out, the grass gets a little head start on it, and you know, an hour out there, you have a nice talk with your child. And
sure. Well, I have some of my favorite pictures of my daughters are them playing, making dandelion chains and playing with those, and we would do that. So, you know, I think we have to remember the pleasures of childhood sometimes.
Let's go to Joyce and Nina next. Joyce, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we live in a home. We've been living in this home for about 2 years, and I do quite a bit of laundry a day, and we had four bushes in a row in front of our home, and they're just beautiful. They're soft. They're not, I don't even know if they're an evergreen variety or not, but they're just a very soft bush, and they come out lime green shoots when they come out new. They're, if you go up against them, they don't prickle your leg. They're just beautiful. Anyway, the dryer vent was blowing air, or the hot air out onto the first of this row of four. And after a year being here, last fall, it just died. So I cut it down, even though I just loved it. I cut it down. And then, of course, I was worried about the second in the row because the dry vent, the heat would go over there for the winter. So then I do like three or four loads a day. Then I put some flower pots around there to keep the second one from getting heat this winter. And I can already see, I mean, the steam probably in the winter just kind of hangs around. I don't know.
Yeah.
It comes down to I can see at the bottom of my second one here that it's starting to get some of that brown to it as
right.
well. And so then we thought we need to build some kind of a retaining wall, which isn't going to look the best in front of our home. But I don't know, or else plant something that would block the second and third and fourth one. I don't know.
A lot of plants just won't take that direct heat off from a dryer vent very well, and particularly anything that's an evergreen is not going to take it very well. So, you know, if you really love these, you may even want to just leave some blank space and move them to another location or something like that.
Raise the vent height.
Yeah, yeah. Or change where the vent comes out.
Change the venting
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, well, but believe it or not,
that I can put there to block it from the next. I mean, I'm probably going to lose a couple if I don't.
Yeah, and I'd be concerned that whatever you'd block it with, you know, even if it wasn't a plant, you know, where is the flow of that air going to go, and you know that you still may have problems. So, yeah, my first reaction was like Larry's is, you know, you probably the best would be move the vent, probably the easiest way. I know it's not easy, but. You know, versus trying to replace plants and add all
and
that other stuff.
If we were going to move these bushes, because I'm sure they've been here for 10 to 15 years, I would guess. I'm guessing that the people that built the house put in this landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wait till fall to move a couple of these, if I wanted to move them, because I don't think we're going to be able to do the dryer vent change, but I guess I could run that by my husband. I'm sure he'd love that. But, I mean, if you transplant something like this, I'd hate to lose them, but there's a few in different areas of our properties, so... Can you transplant most bushes? I guess it's without knowing what it is. I don't know what it is.
Without knowing what it is, it makes it a little harder. But if it's an evergreen, I would not want to transplant it when the new growth is coming out. So I actually don't mind transplanting them in September. So that might be a good time to do it. Make sure you get as much of the root system. So dig a nice big ball with it and move it. So
okay.
And you could take it into your county extension office and or take a picture, and they can identify it for you. If you take in 6 to 12 inches of a sample, then they can tell you what it is, and then they can give you more specifics on how to take care of it.
Oh, thank you. That's a good discussion. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And I'm looking for... Marty's looking for some berry plants that his family could eat, and particularly interested in berries that can be grown in the shade. Any suggestions? And Marty's near Janesville in Milton.
Let's see. Well, most fruit plants do best if they're in the sun. They'll produce better in the sun. Excuse me. Got a frog all of a sudden here. Although certainly raspberries, quite often grow great in the shade or part shade. In fact, they're wild often in that area. So I would look into some of the brambles that would do well. Whatever you like,
blackberries or raspberries.
Yeah.
Either one of them, I think, could do pretty well.
Yeah, black raspberries. Blackberries are borderline hardy for us. Black raspberries or yellow or red raspberries.
Barb Larson, our guest today, Kenosha County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Barb Larson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator out of Kenosha County. Glad to have her back, and thank you for listening in. We have a couple of comments about the dryer vent problem, Barb,
okay,
and a couple
good.
Of emails. Yeah, one person, Muriel, emailed to say they had a similar situation with a vent from a geothermal unit, and they had to replace the plant in front of the vent. We had a three-sided deflector made that we put between the vent and the plant so the heat wouldn't blow directly on it. We also put burlap around the plant over the winter, and the replacement plant made it fine this past winter.
Okay, good.
So that's one. And then Ed emailed in to say that, or I'm sorry, Paul emailed in to say that the person with a vent problem should attach a wind sock, and that will take care of it.
Apparently, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. Now, wind sock might be.
Yeah. You know, the neat thing about gardeners is we all like to share, and everybody has great ideas. So.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And thanks for those tips. Tammy and Ashlyn, we turn to you now. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Good. Hi.
Okay, I still have another question as well.
Okay.
Okay, my mother and I, for the last 2 years, you know, that hanging tomato thing?
Yep. Yes.
Direct sunlight. Uh-huh. And I only got 5 tomatoes off of one plant, 2. My mother got none, and we put 2 plants into each one.
Yep.
And nothing.
Yep. They don't grow very well. Larry was saying
it's just a gimmick.
Yeah, you know, if you want to grow in a container or in a hanging pot, there are tomatoes that are designed for hanging baskets.
Okay.
So, and all you do is plant them right side up in the hanging basket, and then they cascade over, and you get much better production out of them than these upside down things. And
yeah,
you are not the only one.
I had some really weird looking tomatoes last year. I mean, really weird. But the first year, you know, I had, you know, a couple of good sized ones and some cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And then also last year, they're like, really weird looking. Tastes good, but weird looking. They almost look like little pumpkins.
Well, I have to say that we didn't have very good luck with our upside down plant either. last summer. I tried it just because we've been talking about it so much on the show, and I just did not get very good results.
I would say there's very few people, I will confess I have not tried these, but very few people that I've ever talked to that said they had good luck. And Sharon Morrissey, who I know is on periodically from Milwaukee County, they actually tried it, and instead of that brand item, they just used like a 5-gallon bucket and drilled a hole in the bottom and did the same kind of thing.
Really?
They didn't have any luck with that either. She said it didn't work. So, you know, Mother Nature generally doesn't grow tomatoes upside down. So instead,
now they got the strawberry one now too.
So let's just do it the way Mother Nature normally does. And if you do the pots, then, you know, just do one that's a pot grown tomato.
Okay. Yep. One last question.
Sure.
Okay, I had a lot of potting soil from last year and bags. One bag was outside and it froze. Is this still good?
Should be, unless as long as it's sealed up, you should be okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're all sealed.
Okay.
And I didn't know if I can still use it or not.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Tammy. And Rob in Cedarburg, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. Hey, I had a couple questions. The first one I mentioned has to do with melons. I've had not such good luck getting them finished by the end of the year.
Okay.
And it's whether I start them with, you know, a seedling or a seed, you know. And I found some heirloom varieties that I was thinking of starting in a greenhouse, and I was wondering if you thought maybe that might be too late for starting them, and if I grew them in the greenhouse and then planted them. And I've heard all sorts of different gimmicks, like you can paint a coffee can black, and when you start to get a fruit, put the fruit on top of it, and it'll keep it warmer and stuff like that. But I don't know what to do. Well, I'd love to get some.
Well, and I've grown muskmelons, or what we kind of call cantaloupes. The first thing you need to do is select cultivars or varieties that have a short growing season. So you need to either wherever you're researching, the catalog or whatever, between when the seed started, so germination, to when you harvest, has to be fairly short. So because we have a short growing season for something like a melon that likes really hot temperatures, I would start it indoors, and also individual pots. They don't like to be transplanted, so, you know, whether you use cups or whether you use, you know, little pots, that's fine. Then when you move them outside, you may want to, before you move them out, I would say definitely Memorial Day or the first part of June, preheat the soil by using like either black plastic or landscape fabric to make sure you get that soil nice and hot. Moisten it first and then put it right down on top so that the sun helps heat it up. Plant right through that, so that again helps keep that soil hot. And especially if you have a fairly short season, that should do it for you.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm around north of Milwaukee a little bit.
Yeah,
so.
Yep.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And then I was wondering also, I thought I'd mentioned for the guy that wanted shade berries, that sometimes if you can get thimble berries to go down here, they like the shade.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks,
and,
Rob.
Also, I just wanted to ask one thing about plant, you know, biennial type flowering plants.
Mm-hmm.
They say you need to, like, I don't know, you need to plant them so that they can be in the ground while there's still some cold nights left. I don't know if that means freezing. They didn't specify.
I don't know that I've particularly heard that. I mean, the point of the biennial is that the first year you just get leaves, and then the second year you get the flowers. And most people, the recommendation is that you plant seed every year or new, so that you start getting a rotation so that you have bloom every year.
Yeah.
But
if they were perennials, would they need to freeze?
No.
I don't know what you read there or where you read that, but that's a recommendation I've never heard.
No, I haven't heard that one either.
So thanks for calling, Rob. Appreciate it very much. Back to the dryer vent for a minute. Carol emailed us to say that they have a barberry plant mm-hmm. within 2 feet of their dryer vent, and it thrives there.
Yeah, well, barberry is one of those that's really hard to kill, so yeah. I wouldn't be surprised that would be. So I appreciate the suggestion that that's what they've had luck with.
The only problem is little bits of lint in the plant, but it's on the side facing the house, so nobody sees it anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you imagine pulling those little pieces of lint off those thorns?
Oh, boy. Casey in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Casey.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a quick question about rhododendrons. Over the winter, the deer in the yard ate them.
Oh.
I took all the leaves off and all the little flowers.
Uh-huh.
I have maybe two branches left that have all the leaves and all the flower little things. I was wondering if it's going to grow back or is it done?
Well, that's going to be one of those things that you're looking at it. If it was me, I would just kind of wait and see what comes back and how much regrowth you get and what's the shape of it. As long as you've still got, live, some stems and some buds coming back, it may fill out. It probably take a few years, but it may be okay. But you may also get so that, midsummer or fall, you look at it and you go, oh, you are really ugly. So you may want to replace it. I would just wait and see what happens. And then be aware that next year you'll probably have the same problem. So you're going to have to protect them this fall.
All right.
What do you cover them with? Just a sack?
No, I would use a fencing around them.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yep, thanks for calling. John emailed to ask or say he's been fighting garlic mustard for a number of years. Every time I seem to make progress in one area, it pops up somewhere else. Would using corn gluten in affected areas help in knocking out some of the seed stock?
And, I've never seen that recommended, but I don't know, because corn gluten prevents seeds from germinating. So it certainly might work, and it's worth a try with it. Try it out and let us know.
And how do you get rid of burdock? Norma from Cedarburg wants to know.
She didn't tell us where it is, but it's one of those things that, like any other kind of weed, you can either hand remove it, which, of course, it has a huge root system on it, or if you're not opposed to an herbicide, you can use an herbicide on it. Again, I'd use it in the fall. Well, you could do it now, but the prime time would be in the fall again.
Laura in Green Bay, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. About 4 years ago, I bought kiwi vines from a local nursery. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be a male and a female,
mm-hmm.
and it's never produced any fruit. Last year, when I was by it, I actually saw some little blossoms, which it looked like the start of a little fruit, maybe smaller than the size of a marble.
Okay.
But then it fell off.
Okay.
And nothing ever produced.
And are you noticing, because you had males and females, supposedly, are you getting blossoms on all of them?
Just on one.
Okay, that's your problem.
Okay.
you've got to have both the female and male producing. So
how do I know which?
Well, one way to do it is to, the flowers are fairly small, so I don't know if you can tell the difference between stamens with pollen on them. You could even brush it and see if you get anything off that would be pollen.
Okay.
And or the pistils, which you'd see with the female one. So it's, I would think on that, it's a little trickier. On some of our vegetables, you can see, because you can actually look back along the stem. And if it's a female, you can see the fruit before it started to develop. But I don't know that you can do that on probably not on kiwi.
Okay.
So you might have to buy another pair.
Well, or wait, just, you've had them in how long?
About 4 years.
4 years. And how big are they?
They're up the side of a 6-foot fence, and I've had to trim them actually a couple of years too.
Okay.
Is that my problem?
Well, and this is one I'm thinking maybe you don't want to trim them.
Okay.
Okay? Because you may be cutting off flower buds.
Okay.
So let it go for a year and see what happens.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Kathy in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question on how the best and safest way to get rid of huge patches of the common orange daylily and squill. our yard is kind of wild, and we have a lot of that stuff. And we have some really nice patches of native flowers like yellow bee lily and Dutchman's mm-hmm. breeches and blood mm-hmm. red. And these things are encroaching on there. We've got trees and shrubs throughout the huge patches of daylilies. And you know, we've talked about black plastic, but because, I mean, we'd be piecing little pieces of black plastic all over.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Roundup would, you know, how harmful that would be. It breaks down pretty quickly, I think, doesn't it?
Right.
And but we know we have, like, moles and shrews in our, you know, little critters in our yard. We'd rather not harm them if we, you know, could help it or keep from doing that. But we also really want to get rid of these non-native things. And okay. They're just huge patches. They're like grass.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think it's either glyphosate or if it's huge patches, you're probably not going to want to try to dig them out, but that would be your other option.
Okay.
And you need to just carefully protect your, you know, your desirable plants, your native plants when you're applying it. So
by covering them with something?
Yeah, you can cover it. You can even, I've used like a foam paintbrush to apply the Roundup directly to the plants, the undesirable plants. So anything like that, so you directly do it.
Okay. And can you add a food coloring or something to it? Is glyphosate the same thing as Roundup?
Glyphosate is the generic name for it. The Roundup, and be careful, because Roundup has become such a big brand name that they now have other things that they sometimes include in Roundup. So you want to make sure that you read the label and that it only has glyphosate in it, because you don't want a long-acting type product.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll add other chemicals to it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. And the trees that we have and shrubs, if we...
You should be fine as long as you're just directly applying to the undesirable plants.
Okay. And our native flowers that you say we should cover, are we covering them just so nothing sprays
yes.
and blows onto them?
Yes.
Okay.
Until just as you're applying the product, and then you should be
right
okay.
Away.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you know if glyphosate has any effect on such things as shrews and moles, chipmunks, that kind of thing?
I don't think so, but read the label.
Okay.
I don't think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, and, you know, the EP, these are all tested, so,
mm-hmm.
And there's all, so read the
all the
research.
Information.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thanks so mm-hmm. much.
No, thanks for calling. And Adele in Mazamani, we turn to you. Hi, Adele.
Hi, good afternoon. I am going to try for the first time to plant some clematis on the south side of the barn, full sun, and I could use all the help. And if you can give me some tips what to do, what not to do, I'd appreciate it.
The key with clematis is the old standby is they like their heads in the sun and their feet in the shade. So they do like to have basically full sun on most of the plant, but you need to keep the root system cool and not wet, but moist. So I would make sure that, especially if you're planting it on the south side of a building, make sure you keep it well mulched. I grow clematis on the south side of my house. It's fine, but I also make sure that I've got the roots mulched.
Okay, so and then they were talking about the three different kind of pruning for clematis.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
There are three basic pruning types of clematis, and it depends on the clematis you have and when it blooms. And so some of them are only pruned a very small amount. Some have to have heavy pruning on them. So when you get to the point that you're ready to prune it, there are lots of good resources out there that will tell you what type to and how to prune it.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you keep the label so that you know what kind of clematis you have, too.
Yep.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. Cheryl in Beaver Dam said, last year we attempted to grow sweet corn in our garden. Doing great, had small ears until the beginning of July when it just stopped growing and died. Any idea why? We had weird weather.
Yeah, we did have weird weather. I don't know how, I mean, there are all sorts of different possibilities. There are, you know, insect problems.
Corn root
could worm? Yeah, that's what I was wondering, is when some of the root worm problems or that kind of thing. So sometimes it's a little hard to tell. And I'm assuming that she got good pollination, that if she got little ears developing. So Don't, I can't tell you.
It's
sorry.
A mystery.
Yep.
Mary in Milwaukee, hi to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've been an employee at Starbucks for a while now, and we provide coffee grounds for people to take home.
Sure.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
To put in their garden. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you could explain to me so that I could explain to people why that would be a good idea.
Well, it's just another type of organic matter that you can add. And, you know, I remember for many years, long time gardeners saying that they for years took their coffee grounds out and spread them around their plants or put them in their compost pile. And because it's all made up of plant matter, it decomposes and helps add to that in the soil.
Okay, and okay. Then is there something about the acidity of coffee that would be a factor with that?
Not that I know of for sure. So that one, I'm don't know that that's a real issue with it. I don't know if Larry's heard anything, but I haven't particularly heard that that's an acidity kind of thing. But if it is, that's actually not necessarily bad for most of us in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, thank you for your
okay.
help.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Well, we have Todd in Wausau with a question. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We've had Creeping Charlie for about 20 years, and I don't know if there's a successful way to get rid of it. Do you know of anything that works?
That's a long time.
Well, I mean, we hand pull it, and yep. I mean, we've tried. I mean, I could go through a long list of the different things we've tried, but nothing seems to really work.
Yeah. There are a couple of products that seem to at least knock it back some. And one is one called Triclopyr, and it's spelled Triclopyr. You will need to find it. It's hard to find. You would need to find it labeled for use for weeds in a lawn. And that one, we tend to recommend that you treat it when it's in bloom in the spring. It will knock it back, but you will probably have to retreat in fall again. Usually sometime in September, and then may have to treat again the following spring. So usually okay. takes a while to try to control it. So okay. Lawn care companies, if you don't mind doing that, can also have some success with it because they have some products that can do it. Okay. I'm always careful. You can also use a combination product where there's 2,4-D and what's called Mecoprop or MCPP. That you can get kind of intermediate control with it. Some products with dicamba, you can get a little better control, but I hate using dicamba around trees and shrubs because it can be damaging to their roots. So
Sure.
Okay.
So triclopyr.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll try that.
Okay.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. And remember the timing on that, too,
yep.
as well.
Yep, that's key.
Tom in Appleton wonders if you could tell him how big a container, depth and diameter he needs to grow a regular tomato plant like a Big Boy or an Early Girl or a beefsteak.
Oh, I like to have, well, part of it's you need to have counterweight for the plant itself and the steak and all those kinds of things. So yeah. I like to have a good 1.5 to 2 feet in depth. Yeah. You don't need that much. You only need about 12 inches for the roots, but I want that added weight for the plant.
Yeah, you need a little heft there, and if it's, you know, the plant's tipping over and all that business,
right?
That's not going to work either. Well, you mentioned earlier the horticulture, wihort.uwex.edu.
Mm-hmm.
Good place to go for some more information. And Barb, it's always a pleasure. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you. I'd love to.
We will have her back, and we'll do this again. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that's kind of the way it works, unfortunately. But again, that website was wihort.uwex.edu, and that's the place to go. Coming up on Monday, just to let you know, excuse me, Professor Peter Karstensen of the UW-Madison Law School and Professor Dale Scholler talk about next Friday's all-day food summit at Madison. It's going to be held in the Memorial Union, so we have them on. It's a free and open to the public food summit. And then at 11:45, my old friend Jennifer Chavarine, author and quilter from Middleton, talks about her new book, The Aloha Quilt. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.